Live from WNUR News, I'm Gabby Shell. You're listening to the 6 o'clock news on WNUR 89.3 FM HD1, Evanston, Chicago. It's Wednesday, November 20th, 2024. Tonight on WNUR News, comedian Alana Glazer comes to campus. Northwestern students tackle violent themes in Bonnie and Clyde. A look behind the curtain, or the hint screen, of escape rooms. This week's edition of the NU Sports Report and our brand new poetry special segment. These stories and more coming up tonight on WNUR News at 6. Thanks for tuning in. A&O Productions brings a guest speaker to campus every quarter. Last week, they brought in comedian, writer, and actor Alana Glazer. Ilse von Heimberg went to check it out. 4 and 3 and 2 and 1, 1.
Alana Glazer came to Northwestern on November 12th as A&O Productions' fall guest speaker. They wear many hats. When asked to describe their career in one sentence, they said, quote, "I am a comedian and activist who does stand-up and makes TV and movies." They are best known for co-creating the sitcom Broad City with Abby Jacobson. You just heard the show's theme song. They've also worked on films like Rough Night with Scarlett Johansson and False Positive with Pierce Brosnan. However, if none of those ring a bell, you might know them from this viral sound on TikTok.
Do you know them?
No. But in Declare, we all fam.
What?
In Declare, we all fam.
In the club, we are all family. Are you racist?
That soundbite was from an episode of Broad City. It was referenced a couple times at Glazer's speaker event, where they were met with enthusiasm from a crowd of Northwestern students. Before their Q&A, Glazer gave a 20-minute stand-up set from their upcoming comedy special, Human Magic. They talked about raising their toddler, adolescent relationships, and the epidemic of emo boys from their high school years. School of Communication senior Charlotte Admokum appreciated Glazer's mix of bright, bubbly humor with serious topics.
I just like how she kind of like puts like a funny twist on like these everyday experiences and tries to kind of like normalize these things that people like mental health or like, you know, motherhood, like things that are like oftentimes we kind of have to either like hide or put a positive light on. I like the fact that she kind of will find comedy within them and then like use her platforms to like showcase that.
Admokum recently went to one of Glazer's stand-up shows.
I thought this was better than her actual like 1 hour show. Like I was like, oh, if only I had known. But you know, I got the experience twice, so that's nice.
Glazer co-founded an activism group called Generator Collective, which promotes female candidates and democratic participation. They said the 2016 election spurred the organization's founding. They urge students to get involved with activist groups backed by small-dollar donations. Ashley Wong, a Medill sophomore, talked about Glazer's humor and activism.
I didn't expect myself to find her stand-up so funny because it doesn't really apply to me. but what resonated with me was just like her ability to understand our generation, even though she's like 20 years apart, that she trusts that young people can be funny and young people can be intelligent and young people can make their own like decisions and think about the world critically, which is insane coming from like a comedy act.
Cassidy Fralin, a freshman at the School of Communication, said she has worked with Glazer before.
I've been acting since I was really little, and one of the first jobs I ever did was on a show with her called The Time Traveling Bong, and so I met her then, and she was super sweet to me.
Fralin is a member of A&O's freshman group, the Street Team Committee. She said she was super excited when the committee announced Glazer as the fall speaker, and that Glazer's advice to those starting out was inspiring.
As someone who also has aspirations to like be an actor and like be entertainment, it was really wonderful to hear her advice, which was basically prioritize yourself, like slow down because things will come, and also to surround yourself with others that are also making art.
Other fans went to Glazer's talk out of love for Broad City.
My sister and I was just kind of like bonded over the fact that we feel like our relationship is kind of like she's Alana and I'm her Abby. She's kind of just like obsessed with me. That's how we've always described our relationship. And so we've always kind of like just had a lot of comfort from it.
I've always loved comedy, especially from New York City. And Alana and Abby's story has always been really interesting to me. So it was great. I mean, Northwestern hosting such high-level comedy for free for students is amazing.
Others were less familiar with Glazer's work. Brandon Condritz, a Medill junior, hosted the Q&A with Glazer. He said he did not know who the speaker would be when he was contacted to host it.
I know Liz Casolo. She is on one of the teams here at A&O who was kind of organizing the speaker. And she just kind of reached out to me and she's like, we're looking for a moderator. I know you from some various spaces on campus. I know that you would, you know, really have fun with it and you would kind of be a natural on stage. Would you be interested? And I was like, heck yes.
He learned pretty quickly that he was, in fact, familiar with Glazer's work.
I mean, I had heard of Broad City before. I hadn't, you know, really sat down and watched it or anything like that. So I did some research, trust. I sat down, watched a few episodes. Of course, I have heard in Declare We All Fam, what? Like, I've heard that on TikTok a million times. I didn't really put the pieces together that was her until today. And I was like, oh my gosh, wait, that's wild.
And although he was nervous before their Q&A, Condrit said once he asked a question or two, the main goal was to just have some fun.
I love being asked to do things like this because it's like, you know, it's just like, this is the story that I'm going to tell my children one day. Yeah, I met Alana Glazer. Do you know who that is? Well, let's sit down and watch some of their TV.
A&O hosts speaker events quarterly, bringing in comedians, actors, and other high-profile celebs. I guess we'll have to wait and see what and who winter brings to campus. Ilse von Heimberg, WNUR News.
This weekend saw Bonnie and Clyde hit the Northwestern stage. The show struck a balance of thrill-seeking and awareness. Here's Gabe Shumway with more.
Nestled inside the tiny but mighty Shanley Pavilion Friday and Saturday, audiences heard the tunes of the Great Depression's iconic thieves, Bonnie and Clyde. The show was told through their lens, primarily as adults, with moments of their younger selves woven through. These thieves struggled to make ends meet and dreamed of more, but were caught up in violence. These moments manifested themselves throughout the show's themes of gun violence, income inequality, and domestic abuse, among others. The show's director, School of Comm sophomore Alex Lopez, felt that these themes were important to tell, especially in an election year.
Landing on Bonnie and Clyde for me was about exploring how the Great Depression in the 1930s, with gun violence and the overbearingness of religion and justice in government, would reflect into what 2024 looks like today.
Despite 2024 being an election year, this show has been a long time coming for Lopez. He even sketched out some of the show's blocking and set design when he was just 13 years old.
We're looking at this idea of a broken American dream. A lot of our set and our costumes are somewhat dilapidated to reflect the ways in which America, in the ways that it attempts to strengthen us, and turns out to fail us.
As the show progresses, this theme is certainly prevalent throughout different characters and their struggles in the Great Depression. The musical is also based on a true story, with the website for Northwestern's show containing historical breakdowns of many of the characters and settings. The scenes reinforced these difficult notions, complete with prison breaks, siblings shot, and characters on the run. There wasn't always agreement either, with Blanche, Clyde's sister-in-law, attempting to provide a voice of reason to her criminal companions. This allowed the show to engage in conversation about these issues. The show's producer, Weinberg Jr. Connor Smith, echoed this sentiment.
I feel like doing Bonnie and Clyde without this weapons is kind of doing a disservice to the show, because it's about gun violence, and there's conversations in the show about, you know, Bonnie and Clyde talking about the use of weapons and how that affects them mentally.
With a show about two criminals as infamous as Bonnie and Clyde, there are bound to be weapons brought into the space. While there were concerns expressed about having these weapons in a school setting, the group worked with NUPD to create safety measures. Additionally, only prop guns were used.
Sometimes difficult conversations are hard to have when you're just talking one-on-one with someone, and sometimes it helps to hear these conversations through a song, you know, through a message, through a play. And that's one thing we really wanted to talk about through this show, is being able to show these themes on stage and letting people talk about it afterwards, talk about it beforehand, talk about it even like during intermission is really important to us.
With the carefully calculated efforts from the crew, these elements of the show were set. In doing so, the actors struck a delicate balance between the inherent violence and realism with heartfelt moments. Weinberg first year Sonny Noble attended the show and picked up on this idea, praising those involved.
I know they're, you know, have a script to follow and everything, so I think this speaks both to the integrity of the script and also the performance ability of our talent here tonight.
One member of the talent Sonny described is Timmy Woodward, a first-year theater major who played young Clyde in addition to being in the ensemble. Though a longtime fan of Bonnie and Clyde, upon reading the script more in depth, he felt drawn to the contrast. On one hand, the show covers serious topics, but on the other, it's a musical with a plethora of upbeat music.
Finding those moments in the show to balance the super fun, high-octane energy with the real, real moments has been really, really fascinating to me, and I've loved every second.
Much of the energy Woodward described came through the show's music, which included a wide array of genres. While consisting of mostly show tunes, the Old West setting of the show meant that there were country numbers and even gospel songs to boot. This meant performers singing in different styles in a band including everything from a fiddle to a soprano saxophone. The person tasked with the feat of pulling off this musical ordeal? School of Comm sophomore and music director Clara Shapiro.
Honestly, it was so terrifying at first. Like, this was my first solo music directing slot because I had a co on my position last year. So it was really scary, but also, like, I was just really inspired to, like, work really hard and, like, match the energy and the talent of all the other people in the room.
One of the primary factors that brought home an inspiring and energy-rich show was the audience and their enthusiasm. Despite a late-night performance, Shanley Pavilion was packed, and the audience could be heard every step of the way. As a first-year theater major, attendee Tyler Ginto Brody felt that energy throughout the show.
It's really inspiring to see so much energy come from, one, the actors on stage, and also from the audience, because this was for such a long period of time, from the night and going into the morning, but the energy never dropped below 100.
Go to a 9:30 show where people are going crazy. People are laughing, they're cheering, they're yelling at their friends and family, and it's like, it's such a fun environment to have these conversations.
Affecting the nature of the cheering, however, are the characters that an audience is drawn to. With a show that had so many characters who were disturbed, yet humanized in a personal way, it was hard to decide who to root for. When asked who in the show was the hero or villain, there wasn't necessarily a clear answer.
It's a very gray world that we live in, and Bonnie and Clyde, the show, really exemplifies that, and I think through the characters, Bonnie, Clyde, and all the other characters in the show, you can see the bad that people can do either intentionally or unintentionally, while also being able to find the good in everyone despite varying circumstances that they come from.
When looking back at each of the characters, they are frequently portrayed both in poor and redeeming ways. Bonnie writes poetry for Clyde before their relationship abuse is shown. Young Bonnie dreams of being in the headlines and on the silver screen, but achieves that goal as a gang leader, not an actress. Clyde and his brother Buck are introduced with their elaborate handshake before Clyde later has Buck's blood on his hands. This leaves audiences with mixed opinions on the webs that these characters weave. Lopez's advice? Choose love.
I want the audience to feel this palpable sense of love and joy that these two had for each other, and leave with a warmer heart and more empathy towards others, because we have so much capacity for love in our lives.
For WNUR News, I'm Gabe Shumway.
And now, the story you've all been waiting for. Escape rooms. We know them, we love them, and a lucky few of us have managed to solve them. Not me. But what exactly goes into creating this unique form of entertainment? Sophia Quesa has the story.
Challenge. The treehouse raid at Fort Knox. Ghosts in the graveyard. Now, while these might sound like the latest primetime TV lineup, I assure you it's not. It's something better, something you can actually experience without being behind a screen. These are all actually the names of Chicago-area escape rooms. Since the first permanent U.S. escape room opened in 2012 in San Francisco, escape rooms have been a constant part of our culture. And with a good mix of puzzles and plot, there's often something for everyone, whether they are total diehard fans or complete newbies. Communication senior Drew Slager skews towards the more devoted end of the spectrum. He has completed 15 rooms and is currently in the process of creating his own called Locus, which will open its doors to the Northwestern campus this fall.
I love puzzles. I love doing them with my friends. Like, I love doing it with my parents, and I used to do escape rooms all the time back when I, like, lived with them. But it's just, like, and it's always, like, a fun activity to do with, like, family or friends.
Brian Lee can attest to this widespread appeal as the co-owner of Lock Chicago, an Evanston escape room.
You get so many different groups from a lot of corporate groups, from a lot of just your high school students, obviously, Northwestern. You get, you know, Bears players and just a whole bunch of different types of dynamics.
But with so many different people coming to their rooms, including many returning folks like Slager, a distinct challenge arises.
There's only a certain number of puzzles out there in the world.
That's Jonathan Biog, the co-owner of Escape Factor, an escape room in Forest Park.
The job for escape room creators or escape or puzzle creators is to take one of those puzzles and disguise it as something different that people may have not seen before.
According to Biog, there are really only 7 to 10 different types of puzzles out there. So then how do you keep things new and exciting? Well, you find a theme that allows you to incorporate these puzzles in new and inventive ways. Here's Biog again.
When I was a kid, I used to be all around computers. I was always playing computer games, played things like King's Quest, Myst, Zork. Finally, in 2016 or so, I found out about these games, and I went and played it. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is the computer games I used to play as a kid in real life.
Bon Iserjic, the co-owner of Lock Chicago, incorporates a similar childhood passion into his rooms.
Drew a lot of inspiration from things that I saw as a kid, like movie buffs, specifically from adventure movies like The Mummy. Took a step back to say, okay, I really liked how this worked in this movie. What can I do to make this interactive?
For Lock Chicago, Sergich took his love of movie and his technical mindset and turned it into one of his favorite escape room elements.
Inspired by a scene from The Mummy where in order to illuminate a tomb, they have to bounce light off of these mirrors, and the light eventually illuminates the tomb. I built this contraption in the middle that had 8 mirrors mounted on towers and a laser that you have to kind of guide, and you have to unlock and orient the mirrors in order to create light patterns in order to solve puzzles.
But it takes more than a show-stopping element to put together a stellar escape room.
Always have in mind that we're going to build a room for a group of people that have all different strengths.
That's Dexter Kira, the co-owner of Escape Factor.
We've gotten to escape rooms where you literally could be, we call them kind of like ninjas, where somebody could solve something and not tell anyone. But what we like to do is make sure that we build in puzzles that require group activity.
So, to make a quote-unquote un-ninja-able room, one must play to various strengths from math to optical illusions when designing to make sure everyone gets a hand in the escape. But game designers can only do so much to ensure success. At the end of the day, it comes down to the participants. And boy, do these owners have stories to tell. Here's Lee again.
We try to keep, though we always maintain a strong game integrity, but we always want to make sure people have fun. So we've had people call ahead and try to ask for hints, right, to make themselves look a little smarter for their date.
But by and large, cheating in the name of love isn't the case for most games and participants. However, after years of watching from behind the camera, Lee has discovered a common pitfall.
It's kind of like a lack of communication. When we used to do public rooms, right, well, before COVID, we actually saw that public rooms had an actual higher escape rate than private groups.
His co-owner, Sujush, can offer a reason why this is.
Those rooms usually almost never fell into this trap because they were much more polite with each other.
And this willingness to have an open mind, to experiment, and to play is part of what makes a great escape room experience.
First thing we tell people, if you're going to go into an escape room, like, you don't know the answer. The game master knows the answer. The person next to you doesn't know the answer. You don't know the answer. So if somebody says something, you might as well give it a shot.
And more than anything, you have to be perceptive. Here's Slager again.
I just, like, looking at what's in the room, like, if there's, like, drawings or, like, anything that looked like it could be, like, a symbol or a code that's, like, important to know. One of my favorite things to do is looking upside down, because, like, usually there will be something, like, under a chair or under a table or, like, something else, and so that's always fun to look for. But I'd say, yeah, just, like, look at everything, because like the sooner you lock in on something, you're missing something else.
And while being in any sort of entertainment business is never easy, especially considering the last several years of uncertainty mainly stemming from COVID-19, these escape room artists are determined to keep innovating and creating and bringing their best to the people of Chicago and beyond. Here's Biug again.
It's from a love of puzzles and from the love of experience that we do this. So when we see, when we watch these groups come in and play our rooms and they play them, you know, perfect, or not even perfectly, but they just have so much fun moving from puzzle to puzzle. And at the end, you just see their excitement and you can tell that they loved every moment of it. It's just really, it's a great feeling to watch people go through our creation and get as much or even more joy than we got coming up with this stuff in the first place. And I think that's part of the reason we like building these rooms. We like sharing our love of puzzles with other people.
If you're interested and want to try escaping these rooms for yourself, you can visit Lock Chicago in Evanston, Escape Factor in Forest Park, or Drew Slager's Locust December 5th through 7th at Chailey Pavilion at Northwestern. For WNUR News, I'm Sophia Quesa.
Thanks for tuning in to WNUR News. It's 6:23 p.m. Central Time. And it's a Wednesday, so you know what that means. It's time for the latest edition of the Northwestern Sports Report. This week, athletic squads are facing some stiff tests of their own, and postseason play begins in earnest. Here's Brendan Priceman.
Hi, I'm Brendan Priceman. Postseason play is in full swing now, and we're covering all of it here on WNUR News. Here's your NU Sports Report for this week. For the fourth consecutive season, Northwestern field hockey is back in the Final Four. The Wildcats held off the Pierce, Virginia squad at home on Sunday afternoon to clinch a trip to Ann Arbor, Michigan. The 8th-ranked Cavaliers shocked the home crowd by taking a 1-0 lead into halftime. Luckily, Northwestern was able to respond and earned a 3-2 victory in overtime. Graduate student Lauren Wada sealed the deal with a goal less than 3 minutes into the extra period. It's the fourth time in her career Wada has scored a game-winning goal in the NCAA tournament. With the victory, the Wildcats are now just 2 wins away from their second-ever national championship. It's been a season of greatness from the start. Northwestern put forth an undefeated regular season for the first time in program history, going an astounding 19-0. While the team lost to Michigan in the Big Ten championship game, it still holds a 21-1 record. That ties the program record for wins, which was set last year with a 21-2 record. The biggest reason why is Ashley Sessa. Sessa's 23 goals and 17 assists are both top two marks nationally. The North Carolina transfer helped beat Northwestern in the 2022 national championship game. Now, she's 2 wins away from bringing a trophy to Evanston. In cross country, the Wildcats ran wild at the NCAA Midwest Regional. Northwestern didn't have to travel far, with the meet being in Peoria, Illinois, and the team was clearly feeling comfortable. The Wildcats finished third, behind only Oklahoma State and Minnesota. Ava Earl, as is her typical routine, led the way for Northwestern. Earl earned her third straight slot on the all-region team with a time of 20 minutes, 3.7 seconds. Earl took 8th overall at the meet, with teammate Chloe Wellings coming in just behind her in 9th. Wellings' time of 20 minutes, 4.3 seconds was good enough both for a personal best and for Wellings to earn all-region honors for the first time. Ava Carniti also earned an all-region selection, with her time of 20 minutes, 30.5 seconds good enough for 25th at the meet. Catherine Hessler, Holly Smith, and Jackie Holman all also finished in the top 50. Unfortunately, no Wildcats qualified for the NCAA championships, but it was still a stellar season for Northwestern's runners. And finally, Northwestern football looks to close its season strong. The Wildcats played at Wrigley Field on Saturday afternoon, but unfortunately were matched up against number 2 Ohio State. The Buckeyes rolled to a 31-7 win, although Northwestern's offense played better than the score indicated. Jack Lausch completed 21 of 35 passes for 201 yards and did not throw an interception. He also ran for a touchdown in the first quarter. Bryce Kurtz, Northwestern's leading receiver last season, returned from injury and made a major impact. He caught 7 passes for 92 yards, both of which were team-leading marks. Despite sitting at 4-6, the Wildcats are not eliminated from bowl contention yet. Should they win at least one of their final 2 games, they should make it to postseason play. That journey starts on the road against Michigan this Saturday afternoon. That wraps up your NU Sports Report for the week. For more information about upcoming games, as well as how you can watch the Wildcats live, visit www.nusports.com. I'm Brendan Prizman, WNUR News.
Last but not least, here at WNUR, we are all about trying new things. Not to mention, we wouldn't miss an opportunity to turn written word into spoken. Tune in for the very first episode of our new poetry special segment.
Hi, have you taken a deep breath today? Welcome to WNUR News' new poetry segment, where you'll hear timely poem readings to help you relax, reflect, and reconnect. For the fall quarter winding to an end, tonight's selections are about autumn, gratitude, and family. Joy Harjo is a member of the Muskogee Nation and was named the U.S. Poet Laureate in 2019. Her work centers on themes of remembering and celebrating her past and future ancestors, her home, the earth, and beginnings and endings. Throughout, she weaves themes of Indigenous identity and mythology, feminism, and social justice. This is Perhaps the World Ends Here by Joy Harjo. The world begins at a kitchen table. No matter what, we must eat to live. The gifts of Earth are brought and prepared, set on the table. So it has been since creation, and it will go on. We chase chickens or dogs away from it. Babies teethe at the corners. They scrape their knees under it. It is here that children are given instructions on what it means to be human. We make men at it. We make women. At this table, we gossip, recall enemies and the ghosts of lovers. Our dreams drink coffee with us as they put their arms around our children. They laugh with us at our poor falling down selves and as we put ourselves back together once again at the table. This table has been a house in the rain, an umbrella in the sun. Wars have begun and ended at this table. It is a place to hide in the shadow of terror, a place to celebrate the terrible victory. We have given birth on this table and have prepared our parents for burial here. At this table, we sing with joy, with sorrow. We pray of suffering and remorse. We give thanks. Perhaps the world will end at the kitchen table while we are laughing and crying, eating of the last sweet bite.
All right, well, I hope you enjoyed that new special segment, and if you have any ideas for a name, let us know, because we are trying to cook one up. Now that is all for WNUR News at 6 p.m. For more news updates and reports, follow us on Twitter at WNUR News. You can listen to these and other WNUR News stories on our website, WNUR.news. That's WNUR.news. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Our producer today is Krishna Kumar. By the way, he finished his first. So, and our reporters are Ilsa Van Hoek.